Welcome back, listeners to the Street Pro Podcast, and of course, subscribers to the Street Pro. I'm Chris Versace, and I got to tell you, folks, I am excited beyond belief today because in many ways, today's conversation for me is a blast from the past. I'll explain what I mean, but please welcome Lindsay Bell, Chief Strategist of 248 Ventures, where she provides insights and guidance on equity market investing strategies for institutional clients, advisors, and high net worth individuals. The little secret here is that Lindsay and I have known each other for, good God, over a decade. I can't believe I'm saying that. And the funniest thing about it is that in my early days at the Street, Lindsay would interview me, but now the tables are turned, folks. So with that, Lindsay, thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for having me, Chris. This is less of an interview, more of a conversation, right?
Absolutely. that sounds like something I would say, correct. We are unlike, you know, 10, 11 years ago where you would put me through my paces. This is a friendly conversation and we're not looking to clip this in under 2 minutes. So hopefully we can have some fun.
I think we will too.
And I'm really interested to catch up a little bit. But Lindsay, you know, before we kind of talk about the markets, because I think we're kind of at an interesting time here, especially as we move into the March quarter earnings season, just give the folks kind of a thumbnail sketch. Because while you are at 248 Ventures now and we worked together at the Street 10 years ago, you've done a lot in between.
Yes, I have done a lot of different things in between. After the Street, I actually had a year sabbatical where I traveled a bunch, which was awesome. Saw the world, saw the U.S. But then I got back down to business and joined S&P Global as an investment strategist there, working with Sam Stovall, who I'm sure everybody is familiar with. I also used to interview him when I was at the Street. But our equity research department at S&P got bought by a small independent research company called CFRA Research. So I was there for quite a while before getting the call for the opportunity to become the chief investment strategist at Ally Bank. So I was there working in the brokerage business for a little over 3 years through the pandemic before a year ago, I decided to kind of branch off and do my own thing. So now I do a couple of different things. I do what you mentioned, but then I also write a newsletter that kind of digs into some of the economic data. It's called The Shift. I dig into economic data about the labor market and kind of try to make sense of what's happening there from a jobs perspective and what it could mean for the future.
Well, I see that work on LinkedIn because you're smart enough and nice enough to post it there so we can find it. And I do recommend that folks take a look at it. In fact, I think you and I were chatting about doing something along those lines several months back. And I think we were talking about the various, you know, platforms that are out there. So I am very happy that you've kind of embarked upon that. But why don't we start there? Because, you know, on the one hand, the economic data continues to show the U.S. economy just being stronger than people thought it was going to be. You know, retail sales was stronger than expected. The March industrial production report showed, kind of reaffirmed the strength we saw on the manufacturing economy in the March PMI data. But there's some folks who are kind of like pointing fingers at the March employment report. And since that's what The Shift kind of focuses in on, how about we get your take on it? Because the headline numbers were good, but the innards some folks were not quite as thrilled with. In the fashion of Bill O'Reilly, what say you?
I love that. I obviously take a pretty close look at that and all sorts of other labor statistics. Of course, I think for a while now the labor data has been looking pretty good on the surface, but when you dig deep down, there's some different trends that you notice. And one of those trends that I've noticed is a significant increase in part-time workers driving a lot of that. And it's for people say they classify it as people doing part-time work for non-economic reasons or for economic reasons. If they're doing it for economic reasons, it means they got laid off, basically.
Right.
For non-economic reasons, it means they chose to do that. And that number is always a bigger number, but it's been increasing very sharply since, by you imagine, in the pandemic, it came down everybody lost jobs, part-time,
right.
full-time, everybody. But its ascension to where we are today, which is about at pre-pandemic levels, has been a very sharp rise. And it's one that might just have momentum. I mean, if you were a technical analyst looking at the chart of this, right, you could say that could potentially go significantly higher. And then I couple that with the trend in self-employment, which has been moving significantly higher. And then the creation of small businesses during the pandemic shot up significantly and has stayed quite elevated. And it's not that that business creation, anyone can create their own business, can get on their state's website and create an LLC, but those businesses are actually viable. So the percentage of viable businesses have also shot up. So I think that what you're seeing is individuals kind of taking their work situation into their own hands. But at the same time, that big number that you saw, like I said, on the surface level, a lot of it was actually immigration. A lot of it is lower paying jobs, which is why you're seeing the wage increase. I think it was 4.1%, which I will say the positive there is that it was real wages were continued to increase. So like, that's a positive. But it's come down because it's low end jobs that are being added by immigrants. So
the funny thing on that is, if you look at the ADP employment report, because I look at both and I kind of juxtapose it, juxtapose. But what I was going to say is that, you know, I like the ADP report because I like to triangulate, you know, on certain data sets, right? But the ADP report also shows some interesting data for wages, both for job stayers and job changers. And the job changers number for March was up, I think, 10% year over year. So it's accelerating compared to where it was at the end of last year. February was higher than January. March was higher than February. So there is something going on here in terms of wages. And I do think the labor market continues to be tight. Maybe that's why we're just seeing so much part-time work. Maybe it's people looking to make ends meet, taking on a side hustle. But it you know, more people working, earning real wages is not a bad thing.
Well, and that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. And there, a lot of people will point to higher credit card usage going up. But if you look at those, that dollar amount as a percent of disposable income, it's still it's reaching pre-pandemic levels, but that is still a very low level versus if you're talking great financial crisis or even the historic average before that. So the levels are still reasonable. Sure, some of the banks talked about increasing delinquency rates, but none of them, if you listen to earnings, were super concerned. They actually talked about the consumer in a pretty positive way. And I think you and I know, following the markets for as long as we have, as long as people have jobs, the economy can chug along. Granted, inflation does play a good role. But again, maybe this part-time work is also people augmenting their regular salaries to make ends meet. But also I think people are sort of recalibrating. What you see in the retail sales numbers is, what am I spending my money on? There's less, over the years, less people spending less money on electronics and apparel and things like that. And more houses. On experiences and housing and services. But even now they're just like, all right, I'm done buying furniture. Although home improvement was up, but yeah, so you're seeing a shift where they spend money.
So that's interesting you say it, because I know that a lot of folks track that data in the retail sales report on a month over month basis. I shouldn't say I never look at it. My preferred way of looking at it is on a year over year basis. Because when I'm looking at companies, right, I'm not wondering, oh, I wonder how March was against February. I'm trying to figure out what's the year over year comparison for the quarter, or the quarter compared to the prior quarter, right? So I'm always kind of looking at from those two different perspectives. But you are right, though. I mean, you know, yes, we surprised. People really came out in droves and spent more, not necessarily on gas, but people continued to eat out. Digital shopping was hot. No surprise, given Amazon's big event and competing efforts. But I think people are feeling a little better than they did, because they are seeing that more people are working. I have more money. Even though we've seen, what is it, I think 18, 19% year-to-date increase in gas prices, and food prices are still kind of a thorn. But that's also why I like Costco, but that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. So, but what are you thinking overall about the economy? Because Atlanta Fed's GDP was revised to 2.9% based on this week's data. Powell came out yesterday, no surprise. We're not seeing the good data. Gotta take a slower approach with rate cuts and let monetary policy work longer, rates higher for longer. Any of this surprising you, Lindsay?
No, and I think, you know what it is? Like, people make fun of, don't call it a Goldilocks economy. I actually think it might show it, or be signs that the economy is starting to actually heat up. The consumer has been resilient and strong throughout, right? But you're starting to see a perk up. You talked about some of the manufacturing numbers. Corporations are also doing better. I think we're getting into earnings season here. We look at the fundamentals of that. This is going to be, you know, a full four quarter year of positive earnings growth. And while numbers have been reduced significantly for the first quarter, they're mm-hmm. coming in better than expected. I mean, that's kind of the playbook, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But but more importantly is margins are again moving up higher in the face of this inflation, right? Which is why I also think when I look at the fundamentals and I look at earnings, it's really still early in the season. But the companies that are getting dinged the most are the ones with sales misses. So I think mm-hmm. people are nervous about that and how that impacts margins. But overall, you know, like I said, consumers in good shape. Corporations are in good shape. The fear there, too, was this the corporate debt cliff that's coming in mm-hmm. 2025. Mm-hmm. That's actually been reduced and pushed out because we did get a pullback in interest rates in the first quarter of this year, right? A lot of companies took advantage of that and were able to refi. And so that is adding some relief from the corporate perspective. So I see a handful of tailwinds here, manufacturing improving, but there's still weakness in housing and manufacturing is slowly improving. But I think that overall, I'm optimistic about the economy. I think that's part of why you're seeing higher inflation. And I think people are coming to the realization, and you saw it in the B of A fund manager survey that came out this week, that the no land, now we're back into no landing scenario.
So it's so funny that you mentioned that, because I actually published that to the Street Pro portfolio today, just talking about that very thing where, you know, it's so funny really how the narrative for the market has shifted, you know, coming into this year, oh my God, 5 to 6 rate cuts, gotta have it. And then, you know, over the course of the first quarter, that's, you know, the market, I think, begrudgingly came around to fewer cuts. But as the economic data was better, you know, investors kind of connected the dots that, oh boy, that double-digit EPS growth figure for 2024 for the S&P 500 that usually comes down because, you know, it tends to be over-optimistic in the beginning of the year. Hey, that could be. And as a result, the market narrative has shifted towards one of a better economy, shrugging off restrictive monetary policy, able to deliver real earnings growth. So I think that's great. I will say, however, that, you know, you have mentioned the upcoming earnings season. I think this is going to be one where, you know, as we sit here today, the VIX is its highest level since November. You know, if you track the CNN Fear and Greed Index, it has fallen from greed to fear. So I think the market is nervous. And I think some of what we saw in the Middle East, you know, is kind of the driver of that. Hence the flight to, you know, safety a little bit, and gold doing as well as it has. But I do think that not all companies are going to deliver. And I wouldn't be surprised if we start the earnings season off kind of a little spotty, if you will. And I suspect that we'll see volatility pick up with the market really trading on what it heard last. And I think it's going to take, it's going to take, you know, not next week when earnings really pick up, but probably the next 2 weeks to get a real sense of what expectations are really going to be for 2024. You know, are we seeing some expectations come down or not? I think some will. I think there's areas where they'll still be strong. But, you know, by and large, if the market pulls back, we have our shopping list. We know what we want to buy. We are ready. And we'd like to take advantage of it. So are you thinking along those lines as well, Lindsay? Or as you think about that, are there areas of the market that are kind of interesting to you?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely thinking along those lines as well. And, you know, volatility is the price you pay to invest, right? It's not a straight up and to the right line, right? To the market.
No.
But that's what we're here to do, is kind of to take the good times with the bad, and also always looking for opportunity. And I agree. I think that the market is going to be driven. I was hopeful coming into this year that the market was going to, we were going to shift the drivers of the market. We're going to shift the focus from being in interest rates and inflation to being more fundamentally driven. I don't think that's the case. When we just saw, you know, the 10-year move 15 basis points since the end of last week, and the market has made the move that it has made. It's very clear that the market's focused on interest rates and inflation, and then there's those external events that are also impacting the market and creating a sense of flight to safety. But I am optimistic. I think a pullback is good and healthy for the markets. We're even with this 3.5%, wherever we're at today, pullback in the markets from the peak, which isn't that significant, right?
No, not at all.
On average, the average decline any year is 14%, right? And you usually get at least 1-10% correction each year. So, I mean, this could be good. Maybe we get it out of our system sooner rather than later. Also, we're getting into that seasonally weak period.
I agree with you on that. I'm just really surprised that you would like to think that, and I'll just say the market or maybe the herd, that they would pay attention to the data kind of as it unfolds. And it just seems, you know, especially this time around, that the market should have reacted earlier in the year to some of the inflation data that it was getting. But I think for some reason, you know, January, February, as we got that data, you know, I was just surprised that the expectations for rate cuts to slide later in the year took as long as it did.
I think, you know, I agree with that. I think it's like we created this narrative that, oh, January, February, there was special reasons why those were higher. And then we got the March number and there was no improvement. So, and it was a step backward. And next week we'll get the PCE data, and then people start talking about PPI and PCE and the components and all that stuff. And it just becomes more confusing. This is one number maybe we do just take at face value, and instead of creating crazy narratives about, you know, what are some of the service core, X service, X shelter,
super core.
Yes, that's right. Yes, it's like, okay, these are some things I think we want to take at face value, but it raises the question. And I think, you know, I've secretly been wondering this since the beginning of the year. Is this a year or a season where the Fed might need to raise rates again? If you think back to the 90s, like, inflation was in the threes and interest rates were higher and the economy was doing really well. It was like, speaking of jobs, like, it was one of the best times to be alive if you wanted to work. And so the economy can take on, in my opinion, I think it can take on higher interest rates, not only for that reason, but also because, you know, you can argue, are we in a less interest rate sensitive environment now with mortgages, 85% of mortgages locked in at these low rates? That's part of why the housing market is weak, because people aren't moving, you know?
It's because the boomers don't want to move out of their homes because it costs too much. And, you know, between the cost of moving and what they'd have to pay to move into a new home is very different. So their mortgages would either get reset higher, mm-hmm. or they would get far less for the same price.
Right. Well, and then it's the same thing too on the corporate side. Companies took advantage of 0% interest rates.
Oh, of course,
they were scared too. So they took extra money. If you look at the debt coverage ratio in the S&P 500, it's like at historical averages. It's nothing crazy. You look at cash on balance sheets, it's like super elevated. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but corporations are flush with cash. I mean, look at the buybacks too. I mean,
So
the situation is, it just puts into question the sensitivity of interest rates. And if we're less sensitive, maybe we need interest rates to be higher to help things cool off a little bit, to bring prices back in that are more reasonable for individuals.
Well, we will see, because there is a contingent out there that does question whether or not they have to go higher. And I think if we see another print or two, like what we saw in March, going the wrong way, I think you're going to see that that thought kind of gain steam.
Then we'll be talking about the Fed's credibility again in an election year.
Yeah. Well, I don't think my own view is that this is going to be a very contentious presidential election. And I don't think the Fed's going to want to be anywhere near it. So if they don't if they don't cut by July, it's not going to happen until maybe after in November or December. That's why I think just based on the data that we've seen, and I'm really looking forward to the flash PMI data next week, because that'll tell us a little more about inflation trends in April. And again, if they're going the wrong way, then I think rate cuts are off the table, not only for May, but June, July, and that's going to push us out to the end of the year.
No, I agree. I think that's a really fair assessment. I also think it's going to be contentious, and I almost feel like it could potentially be like the black swan, even though it's known, the black swan event of the year that could create a significant amount of volatility. You're telling listeners to get their shopping lists ready. I mean, that's, you always say that. But I think that it could create opportunity. I mean, people are really starting to talk about it and think through it. What does it mean, a Trump presidency versus a Biden presidency? And I think there's going to be a lot to work with. And I don't know how the market's going to digest it.
It's funny because the campaign season hasn't really heated up yet.
No,
you know, we're going to go into full swing. It's April 17th today. I would say by the time we end of June, it's going to be full bore. And there's going to be a lot of folks thinking about to your point, gaming out the scenarios of if one wins, if the other wins, what does it mean for regulations? What does it mean for taxes? I mean, there's a lot that's going to go into this. But I think we've got a long way to go before we get there.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I agree with you.
So areas of interest, Lindsay, in the market. So you said manufacturing, you said housing, not so much. Any other areas in particular? And of course, if there's any stock ideas you have, we would love to know.
I don't have any individual stock ideas for you, but I still think what we saw, the broadening out of the market in the first quarter, as people got more comfortable with the idea of lower interest rates and a growing economy and the soft landing picture. I still think industrials and materials, I know they've run, but I still think that there might be opportunity. They're the sectors that have actually pulled back, not most significantly, but they had good pullbacks since the top of the market at the end of March. So they've seen a bit of a pullback. I think that if you really believe that the economy can pick up, which I do for some of the reasons we talked about, but also just secular trends, the proliferation of AI, the investment by the government, the fiscal investment into growing the technology sector here in the US and reshoring and all those other trends, I do believe that there is a bit of an economic tailwind along with the consumer remaining strong. So I do think that these are two sectors that could continue to see growth. I will say they've fallen, but not as hard as some of the other sectors like financials or healthcare or even consumer staples and discretionary. So I think they're holding their own because people, I think there is that belief, like that you're returning to the no landing idea that like that economic growth can proliferate. So I'm just looking at those two sectors. I really want to listen to what those companies say, because remember, we're coming out of a very, very long deceleration in manufacturing. And so I'm just kind of looking for opportunity there. Granted, I understand the Boeing impact is going to be substantial, but you're even seeing the airlines that reported this week doing all right. I mean, I guess Delta was down, but United today, or was that yesterday? You know, they're talking about deliveries are being decreased, but they're still beating and, you know, talking, you know, upbeat.
No, 100%. What about housing, though? Because housing is one of the ones that, you know, we saw that downtick in the March housing starts, right? Affordability is a question. I think that, you know, housing prices just in general need to come in a little bit. You know, and as it looks right now, the housing starts, particularly single family, are going to hit very strong comps in, I believe, May, June timeframe. So, it's going to get a lot more challenging. And I'm just kind of curious on how you're thinking about the housing market.
Yeah, I know. It definitely seems like a sector that's fallen out of favor for all those reasons. You know, just anecdotally, I'll say I'm in Charlotte, which has been a very hot housing market throughout the pandemic. And what I've noticed, just, you know, I got my Zillow app, you know, just keep track of things. There are more houses in my neighborhood going up for sale, and I haven't seen that in 4 years. So I do think that there, and I, you know, me and my husband, we go back and forth around the dinner table. Why do you think that is? Why are people starting to sell? Is it people trying to, you know, just kind of lock in the prices at the top, like older people?
Yeah.
I mean, you just went through the scenario of an older couple moving out of their house and selling it and the cost that's related there, but maybe they're downsizing. I don't know. So I find that interesting in a hot market like this that hasn't seen a lot of availability in years now, that you're starting to see availability come online. Again, one market doesn't make a trend. But I do think that for the time being, the way that I would look at the housing market is look at where are the pockets of strength. And it was in the retail sales number and home. And that might just be a spring thing. With, you know, Home Depot and Lowe's. I haven't looked at those stocks in a while though. So
that's all right. So the thing that kind of jumps out at me though is we're going into the spring selling season, which is one of the should be one of the busiest times of the year. Maybe that's why you're seeing a lot more homes pop up in Charlotte. But mortgage rates are back over 7%. Mm-hmm. You know, and yes, I agree, more people working with real wages are good for spending. But, you know, when you're talking about the value of a house and you're paying out 7% over, you know, 30 years, that's a lot of incremental cash that you'll be paying. And you know, so I just wonder if people are waiting either for more lower priced homes to come on the market. So like when D.R. Horton or Pulte or some of these others report, I'm going to want to see what's the average price in their backlog. Is it coming down so that they can kind of meet the consumer, the home buyer, kind of where they want to be?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it's going to be a tough slog for them this time around. And it's just, again, consumers are making more money, but not significantly more. Like home prices are up. How much in the last
three years? Admit it. That's
wages aren't up like that.
But admit it, Lindsay, that's why you're checking your Zillow. You want to see how much your house is worth.
I am. And I'm just like, can you just stop? And no going down. We're not allowed to go down in price on my house.
Exactly.
On my house, because I'm not moving.
Okay. All right. Any other big thoughts, Lindsay, to share?
No, I mean, I really do think that we covered a lot of good territory. And we talked about all the things that I really kind of have been focused on. And so I think we covered a lot of ground. I feel good.
All right.
About it.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, so if folks want to listen and get your thoughts on the economy, your analysis a little bit more, where can they find it? And more importantly, if they want to read more about your thoughts about the employment situation, where can they find that?
So they can find my markets and economic take on Twitter, mostly at just L Bell. Or you can find me on LinkedIn under Lindsay Bell. I put a lot of thoughts out there. You'll see, I'll talk about what I'm writing in The Shift, which is my newsletter there. But if you want to subscribe to that newsletter, it's www.lindseybell.me. lindseybell.me. And you'll find The Shift.
lindseybell.me. Okay, well, I'll have to check it out myself. Lindsay Bell, great to catch up. Love the conversation. Love the laughs. We will have to do it again.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Look forward to it. Okay, folks, that is our podcast today. Thanks again to Lindsay Bell, Chief Strategist at 248 Ventures. And we'll be back next week with another conversation that goes behind the scenes, puts you in the know.